Accession number 10420, rule 49. Accession number 10420, rule 49.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 49. You're on the boat on the eve of the invasion, Colonel.
Yes, and a minute or two after midnight on the 10th of July, we paraded at both boat stations. The General Dempsey, the Corps Commander, the GOC, Kirkman, and the Brigadier had both spoken to all ranks, and we paraded at boat stations, and I wished all good luck to all my warriors as they went to embark in their boats. We had, before we embarked at 11 o'clock, an evening meal, and we also had a dash of rum in the tea. And I arranged that for that meal, all my officers and I would feed together at one table. And there was hardly a word spoken. Everybody looked frightfully grim. And I think they were wondering what on earth was with the storm blowing outside. Anyhow, on the 10th of July, just after midnight, we paraded at boat stations. I wished all my chaps good luck. And there was absolute silence, except the boots on the deck and perhaps a banging of an equipment or a cabin door. Slammed. And when I got to my boat, the OC troops and the Brigadier wished me luck, and Claude Lincoln, and who was the Brigade Major, and one or two others also wished us all the best. And it was quite obvious the weather was going to create the most appalling difficulties. In fact, it wasn't until 1 a.m. that the first wave of boats was lowered, so that was very nearly an hour. We'd been hanging in suspense over the ocean in our landing craft, and the B wave followed about 15 minutes later. And I think I've described the drill, that what should have happened was that the landing craft should have gone three times round at the mother boat like a hen and chickens, and then set off for the shore. But this never happened. Once we were in the water, everything went wrong. In a very short time, the boats were all over the place. The normal drill is, as I've said, was a hen like a chicks, we should have circled three times the Orontes, the 12 landing craft. I had 12, I think I've said, landing craft, six on the port side and six on the starboard. Should have gone round the Winchester Castle three times, but I know that I certainly went going round the Orontes with a few LCAs of the 9th Battalion. It was difficult to see, for we were either on the crest of the wave or right down in the trough. You were going up and down, up and down. And I must confess, my sub-lieutenant who was in charge of my landing craft, charming fellow to meet, but he wasn't frightfully brilliant. Now he was under such difficulties. In no time, the breakers were coming over the craft, and everyone was absolutely soaked to the skin and dripping from head to foot. And, of course, it was still dark, pitch dark.
Who had you with you in your boat, Colonel?
Who I had with me? I had battalion headquarters. Now, I had as my battery commander sitting immediately behind me a Major Kenneth Payne, who was an extremely gallant battery commander. He was a wonderful fellow. He was a lawyer and a Cambridge rowing brew, an old Etonian, and very popular with everyone at my battalion headquarters. He was in the 98th Field Regiment, which was the old Surrey and Sussex Yeomanry, and they were now with priests, self-propelled guns, and they would be coming in the flight behind us. And according to the GOC Kirkman, who was a gunner himself, this particular field regiment, the Surrey and Sussex Yeomanry, were one of the best regiments known. Now, he died the other day, just the other day, and his obituary was in the Times. And he was a tremendous awe. I think he was president at Henley. I think he also coached the Cambridge crew, as well as being a great oarsman himself. And he was a charming man. And he just died not 3 weeks ago. And there was a long obituary in the Times. And he sat behind me. Now, I didn't sit. I knew if I sat, I'd be feel frightfully seasick, as my good Derek Tomlinson, an adjutant, did. He was in good heart, but feeling wretched. And water poured over us at intervals. And at times, we had to stand to man the pumps. So you can imagine what it was like. I had no landing craft anywhere near me. I couldn't see a thing. Occasionally, there was this sort of a landing craft did come, and you carried on a sort of conversation. Who are you? I can't hear. Who did you say you were? And then you'd suddenly find it was the 9th DLI, and not and none of yours, chaps, your boats. And my, as I say, rather stupid naval officer wouldn't hail a destroyer. There was a destroyer we passed, and asked him to verify his position. But somehow he couldn't do that. And we'd really no idea where we were. However, on coming to a second destroyer, I made him hail it. And she was creeping into the shore very, very slowly as daylight was breaking. Daylight shouldn't have been breaking because we were so late that it was. She told us she'd not seen any other landing craft assault except ours. But by now the sea was getting a bit calmer, and as we came into the shore, we were going on the right bearing, but time was getting on, and we could only just see the coastline. It was not really even possible now to make out the line of the hills beyond the coastline, which was going to be our guide. We issued a rum ration. We took some rum aboard and we issued it. The fellows really were in a pretty bad state. But I was just, I stood up in front of the craft with my cocks and was absolutely soaked to the skin. And I suppose somewhere around about 3:15, it was after 3, we saw a green light being flashed ahead of us. And I hoped this would be Maurice Kirby of my support company as the military landing officer, MLO, and for the battalion signalling us in. He would ought to have been in one of the leading craft to signal us in. And then for a long while it was lost to view. And then it came again, and we drew up against the little foul boat. We drew up to the little foul boat from whence the light was being flashed, and it was from a naval officer. It wasn't Maurice Kirby at all. It was from it was a naval officer in this little foul boat, which had been put out of a submarine, and it was really there to guide the 9th Battalion onto the right beach. And when I asked him where we were, he confirmed our position and was somewhat scathing about how he'd been flicking the bloody light all night, and we were the first landing craft he'd seen. But by now daylight was coming, and we could see the white pillars of the arch onto the dance floor at Marina di Vola, and we could just say see the dance floor itself in the water. We passed in the dark what I looked to me to be at first sight a huge rock, and this I thought was very, very strange, because we'd studied the beaches and the where we were at the shore and where we were going to land, and on none of the charts had we seen this huge rock. But when we drew up closer to it in the dark or in the half light, it was the tail end of a glider that had gone into the water, and I suppose all the occupants had been drowned. But we had no time to wait for that. I started to go in with my landing craft, or my coxswain took us in, and we were met by, in the half light, well, it was getting fairly light now, by some shell fire and bullets, and it was quite clear that no landing craft had gone in front, none of my landing craft had gone in front of me and got obtained a landing. So we put down, threw overboard our smoke canister and put down a large smoke screen. Each craft carried one of these smoke canisters. I'm not sure they didn't carry three. And we pulled out, and we went in to land, now in daylight, behind a platoon of the KOILI of the 5th Division, which had landed higher up the coast from Evola. It was quite obvious that my battalion was nowhere near its right place. Well, eventually I found the 9th Battalion, and I was still dripping wet, and I kept my battalion headquarters together as best I could. And I then pushed ahead towards Evola, And as I say, I came across a platoon of the 5th, a care wild eyes from the 5th Division, who'd also been landed in the wrong place. And they had forced the beach just below us. And getting the battalion headquarters together, we then got our position, found a position amongst the dense lemon trees and other fruit trees. We landed at about 4:30 a.m. The sun was now coming up, and there were some still some Italians still knocking about in the orchard. And the RSM searched, who was with me, of course, the Lido di Vola, this is the dance floor, and all around there, and that was all empty. But there was firing in the town. I took and was carrying then a rifle. I thought a rifle was, I had a revolver as well. And we set off in the direction of the where the 9th ought to be, and finally I found them. They were still being held up by a post in the part of some flats in the town, in the corner of the town of Avola, and they weren't yet in their correct places, although they were very near it. Then the brigadier came up, and I then rejoined, after a conference with him, I rejoined the headquarters, my headquarters personnel, and we set off into Vola, and we found our proper place where we decided we would establish headquarters in the event of our being landed in the right place. But we wandered about all around the outskirts of Vola, trying to get to it, because we'd been landed in such an appalling place. And then eventually the whole of the battalion realized, or the rest of the battalion realized, that they'd all been landed in the wrong place. The only company that really didn't appreciate that at first was A Company, and instead of making their way northwards, they started to go southwards. So it really wasn't until about 1:30, I think, in the midday, that we were all in the right place. And we cut the telephone wires, which we were told we had to do, and we blocked the railway. We hadn't to destroy the railway, but we had to block it so that no information about the landing could get to the German and Italian headquarters. Suffered casualties. Some of the companies suffered quite serious casualties. Captain Walton, who was the second in command of, I think, D Company, he was killed, and I think there were about 14 killed and wounded in that particular company, and one chap was drowned. I think one company met barbed wire right off the water's edge and had to lie in the sea till the gaps could be made in the wire.
Some of the Italians fight quite fiercely.
Well, none of them. There was spasmodic firing. Spasmodic firing. From Vola itself and from the ground behind it. Certainly the mortar bombs or shell fire that came around my landing craft was fired from the hills behind Vola. I made a note at the time. What were the lessons? to be learned. Well, every man must know the plan. And you must trust your subordinates. And you must be able to be sure that they can all read a map when once they're ashore. But those were the lessons that I learned for the landing. Eventually I got a carrier and I went into Evola. And it was rather rather interesting to see the reaction of the inhabitants. Some were delighted to see us and wanted to be free from Italy and be part of the British Empire. My driver in the carrier and myself was kissed by some old Sicilian as we drove through the town. Of course, there were signs of war. And there were dead Italians lying about and dead animals. But on the whole, the inhabitants were quite pleased to see us. I think they were shattered, really, at the surprise of seeing British troops having landed seemingly without much trouble in the night. Each man, incidentally, I should have mentioned, was given a toggle rope by the Royal Navy, and in case there were cliffs to scale, each man carried a toggle rope. You asked me what equipment, but I forgot about the toggle rope. And we captured an Italian anti-tank gun, and we brought that into operation at one of the crossroads just outside of Evola in our area. And the Evola railway station was in our area, and we ran up a Union Jack on that, which the Royal Navy had provided for us. And in addition, I had 200 American parachutists, which had all been dropped in the wrong place. And they were delighted to see us. And I think that some of them, at some time or other, had been had trouble with the Sicilians or wherever they'd been landed. And the Sicilians and the Italian army had been pretty unpleasant to them. And they were out for vengeance, in all truth. I mean, they shot up anything that came anywhere near the positions I put them into. I gave them the positions they were... I had the utmost difficulty in the end getting rid of them. They'd been dropped 40 miles out in the wrong place. And but they were quite splendid. Their rations were luxurious in the extreme. But these two... I had one chap sat on the back of my jeep the whole time. He wouldn't let me out of his sight as you might say, as my escort. Well, as the day wore on, we took up our positions and things quietened down, and we didn't take any anti-sleep pills or medicines. We did bring with us malaria pills and ointment, Mepocrine or whatever it was called, and incidentally, when you're landing, if I remember rightly, you had to have all your buttons undone and your equipment undone. So if you were drowning, you could get it off pretty quickly. But anyhow, there it was. The night of July the 10th, we spent our first night quietly and peacefully in Europe.
And there was no sign of Italian or German opposition at this time?
No, although the next day we were warned that there might be a counterattack by the Italians. Yes, we were warned about that. And
how big is Avola? How large of a town is Avola?
Avola, I think about the size of Barnard Castle, something like that. Or was then, I don't know what it is now.
It's right on
the east coast, and just slightly inland. And then this Marina d'Avola was this fancy dance floor and archway, which was the guiding line for my craft.
Was it a good beach to land on? Or was there
yes.
Never had to use your toggle ropes? At all.
Oh, no. Toggle ropes were never used. It was just part of the Navy's...
And which companies were intended to land first from your point?
A company was one, D was the other. And then there'd be B behind. I think that was it. I can't remember now offhand.
Who was your company commanders?
Wood. I was one. Galloway was the other. And Peter Walton was the other. Three companies. And Jackson, I think, was commanded the headquarter company. Or there'd be Maurice Kirby would be there. But you had to fit all these people. Maurice Kirby wouldn't have his carriers there. They had to come later. But he'd have to be there. You had to fit all these people most carefully into the your craft. You couldn't have more than your 33 in the craft.
Did you have any radio communication? Did they let you down again?
I don't think I was in radio communication with my other companies. There should have been, but they were so far away now. They were well down south of Avola. And the 9th Battalion was on the north of Avola. It was to go in on the north side, and we were to go in on the south side. And further up should have been the KOILI of the 5th Division.
So you must have landed north of...
We landed north of Avola.
Then made your way into Avola to your headquarters.
Made the way down to a corner of the town on the outside of the town, on the south side. We made our way, and you've got to remember there were thick fruit trees and all around the town.
Was it heavily mined at all, Colonel? Did you have any mines?
No mines. No.